Chapter 16. It was Sunday morning. Graeber was standing in Hockenstrasse. He noticed there had been a change in the appearance of the ruins. The bathtub had disappeared, so had the remnant of the staircase and a narrow path that had been shoveled out leading around the wall into the courtyard and from there obliquely into what was left of the house. It looked as though a cleanup troop had started to work. He squeezed through the cleared entrance and came into a half-buried room which he recognized as the former laundry of the house. From there, a low, dark passage led further. He struck a match and let the light fall ahead of him.
"What are you doing there?" someone shouted suddenly from behind him. "Come out at once!"
He turned around. He could not see anyone in the darkness and walked back. A man with crutches under his arm stood outside. He was wearing civilian clothes and a military overcoat.
"What are you up to here?" he barked.
"I live here. And you?"
"I live here and nobody else, understand? Certainly not you. What are you snuffling around for? Something to steal?"
"Man, don't excite yourself," Graeber said, looking at the crutches in the military overcoat. "My parents used to live here, and so did I before I joined the Prussians. Now are you satisfied?"
"Anyone could say that."
Graeber took hold of the cripple by the crutches, cautiously pushed him aside, and went past him out of the passage. Outside, he saw a woman approaching with a child. A second man was following her with a pickaxe. The woman had come out of a shack that had been put up behind the house. The man was approaching from the opposite side. They took up positions confronting Graeber.
"What's happened, Otto?"
the man with the pick asked the cripple.
"I caught this fellow here, snuffling around. Says his parents used to live here."
The man with the pick gave an unfriendly laugh.
"Any more to this story?"
"No," Graeber said, "just that."
"I guess nothing else occurred to you, eh?"
The man hefted the pick in his hand and raised it.
"Disappear. I'll count to three. Otherwise, there'll be a little case of a fractured skull. One."
Graeber sprang at him from the side and struck. The man fell, and Graeber tore the pick out of his hands.
"There, that's better," he said. "And now shout for the police if you like, but probably you don't want to, eh?"
The man who had the pick got up slowly. His nose was bleeding.
"You better not try it again," Graeber said. "I got some training in close fighting from the Prussians, and now tell me what you are doing here."
The woman pushed in front.
"We live here. Is that a crime?"
"No, and I am here because my parents used to live here. Perhaps that's a crime?" "Is that really true?" asked the cripple.
"What else? What is there to steal here anyway?"
"Enough for someone who doesn't have anything,"
the woman said. "Not for me. I'm on furlough, and I'm going out again. Have you seen that notice outside in front of the door? The one asking for news about a father and mother? That's mine."
"Is that who you are?"
asked the cripple.
"Yes, that's who I am."
"Well, that's different. You understand, comrade, we're suspicious. We were bombed out and fixed things up for ourselves here. After all, you have to have some place to live."
"Did you shovel all that out by yourselves?"
"Partly. People helped us with it."
"Who?"
"People we know who have tools."
"Did you find any dead?"
"No."
"Are you certain?"
"Yes, certain."
"We didn't."
"Perhaps there were some there earlier, but we didn't find any."
"That was all I wanted to know," Graeber said.
"You didn't have to smash another man's face to find that out," the woman said.
"Is he your husband?"
"That's none of your business. He's not my husband. He's my brother, and he's bleeding."
"Only his nose."
"His teeth, too."
Graeber lifted the pick.
"And this? What was he going to do with this?"
"He would not have attacked you."
"Dear lady," Graeber said, "I have learned not to wait till I'm attacked."
He threw the pick in a wide arc onto the rubble. They all watched it. The child set about climbing up after it. The woman held him back. Graeber looked around. Now he saw the bathtub, too. It was standing beside the shack. The staircase had probably been used for firewood. In a heap lay empty cans, flat irons, broken crockery, odds and ends of torn cloth, wooden boxes, and fragments of furniture.
The family had moved in, had built the shack, and now obviously regarded everything they could scrape together out of the rubble as manna from heaven. There was nothing to be said against it. Life was going on. The child looked healthy. Death had been overcome. The ruins had become a shelter once more. There was nothing to be said against it.
"You worked damn fast," he said.
"You have to work fast," the cripple replied, "when you have no roof over your head."
Graber turned to go.
"Did you find a cat here?" he asked. "A little black and white one?"
"Our Rosa,"
the child said.
"No,"
the woman replied defiantly.
"We did not find a cat."
Graber climbed back. No doubt even more people lived in the shack. Otherwise, they could not have done so much in so short a time. But perhaps, too, a commando crew had helped them. At night, prisoners from the concentration camps were often sent into the city to help with the clearing. He went back. It seemed to him that he had suddenly become poorer. He did not know why. He entered a street that was entirely undamaged. Not even the big plate glass windows of the stores had been broken. Walking ahead absentmindedly, he suddenly stopped short. He had seen someone coming toward him, and for a moment, he had not realized it was himself, striding forward in the diagonal side mirror of a clothing store. It was strange, as though he were looking at a doppelganger and were no longer himself now, but only a memory that would be wiped out as soon as he walked a step farther. He stayed where he was and stared at the image in the dim, yellowish mirror. It was pale and undulating and gray. He saw only the hollows of his eyes and the shadows beneath them, not the eyes themselves. And it was as though he no longer had any and was already a death's head. A chill, alien fear crept upon him. It was not panic and not revolt, no urgent, hasty cry of existence for flight and defense and alertness. It was a tugging, cold, almost impersonal dread. A dread that admitted no handhold, because it was invisible and intangible and seemed to come out of a vacuum where monstrous pumps had been installed, which were silently draining the blood out of his veins and the life out of his bones. He still saw his image in the mirror, but it seemed to him as though it must soon grow indistinct, wavy, and the outlines must dissolve and be absorbed, sucked up by the noiseless cosmic pumps, drawn away from the surface and out of the accidental form that for a short time had been called Ernst Graber, back into something limitless that was not simply death, but horribly much more than that. Extinction, disintegration, the end of the self, a vortex of meaningless atoms, nothingness. He stood there for a time. What remained, he thought, deeply shaken. What would remain when he was no longer there? Nothing but a dying memory in the heads of a few people. His parents, if they were still alive. Certain friends. Elizabeth, perhaps. And for how long? He looked at the mirror. It seemed to him he had already become as light as a piece of paper. Thin, wholly shadowy. Something a breath of wind could sweep away. Drained by the pumps, now only an empty husk. What would remain? And to what could he hold fast? Where could he drop anchor? Where find purchase? Where leave behind something to hold him so that he would not be completely swept away? Ernst, said someone behind him. He whirled around. A one-legged man on crutches was standing there. For an instant, Graber thought it was the cripple from Hockenstrasse. Then he recognized Mutzig, a classmate.
Carl, he said.
You? I didn't know you were here.
Been here a long time, almost half a year.
They looked at each other.
You wouldn't have imagined this, would you?
Mutzig said.
What?
Mutzig lifted his crutches and set them down again.
That.
Well, at least you're out of all the crap. I have got to go back.
Depends on how you look at it. If the war goes on for a couple of years, then it's luck. If it's over in 6 weeks, it's a damn bad break.
Why should it be over in 6 weeks?
I don't know. I only said if.
Well, of course.
Why don't you stop in and see us sometime? Mutzig said. Bergmann is here too, both arms at the elbows.
Where are you?
In the city hospital, amputees section. We have the whole left wing. Stop in sometime.
Good. I'll do it.
Really? They all say that and then not a single ass turns up.
Positively.
Good. It will amuse you. We're a lively crowd, at least in my room.
They looked at each other again. They had not met in 3 years. But now they had already said everything there was to say.
Well, take it easy, Ernst.
You too, Carl. They shook hands.
Did you know Siebert was dead?
Mutzig asked.
No. 6 weeks ago. And Lina?
Lina? I didn't know about him either.
Lina and Lingen. They fell the same morning. Brunning went crazy. Have you heard that Hallmann got it too?
No.
Bergmann heard that.
Well, take care of yourself, Ernst, and don't forget to visit us.
Mutzig hobbled away. It seemed to give him a definite satisfaction to talk about the dead, Graeber thought. Perhaps it made his own misfortune less. He glanced after him. The leg had been amputated high up on the thigh. Mutzig had once been the best runner in their class. Graeber did not know whether to pity him or to envy him. Mutzig was right. It depended on what was coming. When he came in, Elisabeth was perched on the bed in a white bathrobe. She had twisted a towel around her head like a turban, and she sat there beautiful and still, and entirely self-contained, like a great bright bird that had flown in through the window and was now resting in order to fly on again. "I have used up all the hot water for a week," she said. "It was a great luxury. Frau Leeser will set up a fine howl."
"Let her howl. She won't miss it. True National Socialists don't bathe very often. Cleanliness is a Jewish vice."
He went to the window and looked out. The sky was gray and the street was quiet. Opposite, a hairy man in suspenders was standing in a window, yawning. From another window came the notes of a piano and a harsh female voice singing scales. Graeber stared at the excavated entrance to the cellar. He was thinking about the strange, cold terror he had felt in the street in front of the clothing store, and he felt chilled again. What would remain? Something, rather, ought to remain, he thought. An anchor to hold him so that he wouldn't drift away and fail to return. But what? Elisabeth? Did she belong to him? He had known her for only a short time, and he was going away again for years. Would any of this remain? How could he keep her, and himself through her? He turned around. Elisabeth, he said. We ought to get married.
Get married? She laughed. Why?
Because it's senseless. Because we have only known each other a couple of days, and because in a few days I have to go off again. Because we don't know whether we want to stay together, and actually could not possibly know in such a short time. That's why. She looked at him.
You mean because we are alone and desperate and have nothing else?
No. She was silent. Not for that reason alone, he said.
Then why?
He looked at her. He watched her breathing. She suddenly seemed very alien to him. Her breasts rose and fell. Her arms were different from his. Her hands were different. Her thoughts. Her life. She would not understand him. How could she, after all? When even he himself did not clearly understand why he all at once wanted it.
If we were married, you would not have to be afraid of Frau Leeser, he said. As the wife of a soldier, you would be protected.
Would I?
Yes.
Graeber grew embarrassed under her glance.
At least it would help some.
That's no reason. I'll take care of Frau Leeser, all right.
Get married. We haven't even time.
Why not?
You have to have papers, permits, proof of Aryan blood, health certificates, and I don't know what else. That takes weeks.
Weeks, Graber thought. She says that so lightly. Where will I be then?
With soldiers, it's different, he explained. War marriages go faster. In a couple of days. I've heard about it at the barracks.
Is that where you got the idea?
No. I believe it only occurred to me this morning. But in the barracks, they often discuss the subject. Lots of soldiers get married on leave. Why not? When a soldier from the front gets married, his wife is entitled to a monthly subsidy. 200 marks, I think. Why make a present of that to the state? If one has to put his head on the block, why shouldn't he at least take what he's entitled to? You could use it, and otherwise the state will keep it, isn't that right?
If that's the way you look at it, perhaps it's right.
That's what I mean, Graber said, relieved. Then there's a loan for the heads of families in addition. 1,000 marks, I believe. Perhaps, too, you wouldn't have to go to your coat factory anymore if you were married.
Yes, I would. That has nothing to do with it. And what should I do otherwise all day long, alone?
For a moment, Graber felt very helpless. Just what are they doing with us, he thought. We are young and ought to be happy and free to stay together. What do our parents' wars have to do with us?
We will both be alone, he said. But if we are married, we will be less so.
Elizabeth shook her head.
You don't want to? He asked.
We would not be less alone, she said. We'd be more so.
All at once, Graber heard again the voice of the singer in the house opposite. She had stopped practicing scales and was now singing octaves. They sounded like shrieks that were answered by an echo.
After all, it is not irrevocable, if that's what you're thinking, he said. We could always get a divorce later on if we want to.
Then why should we marry?
Why should we make a present of anything to the state?
Elizabeth got up.
Yesterday you were different, she said.
Different in what way?
She smiled briefly.
Let's not talk about it anymore. We are together, that's enough.
You don't want to?
No.
He looked at her. Something in her had withdrawn and closed against him.
Damn it,
he said. I meant it so well.
Elizabeth smiled again.
Sometimes that's just the trouble. One oughtn't to mean too well. Have we still something left to drink?
We still have Slivovitz.
Is that the one that comes from Poland?
Yes.
Haven't we anything that isn't booty?
We must still have a bottle of Kummel. That's from Germany.
Then give me that.
Graber went into the kitchen to get the bottle. He was angry at himself. He stood for a moment in front of the pots and pans and Binding's presence in the half-darkened room, which smelled of former meals, and felt empty and burned out. Then he went back. Elizabeth was leaning against the window frame.
How gray it is, she said. It's going to rain. Too bad.
Why is it too bad?
It's our first Sunday. We could have gone out. It's spring outside the city.
Would you like to go out?
No. For me, Frau Leeser's absence is enough. But for you, it would be a change from sitting around here.
It doesn't matter to me either. I've lived long enough with nature and have no more need of her for quite a while. My dream of nature is a warm room free from bullet holes and with unbroken furniture. That's what we have here. It's the greatest adventure I can imagine, and I can't get enough of it.
But perhaps you've had more than enough of it.
We can go to a movie if you like.
Elizabeth shook her head.
Then let's stay here and not stir out. If we leave, the day will break into pieces and will be over quicker than if we stay. This way it will last longer.
Graber went to Elizabeth and took her in his arms. He felt the rough toweling of her bathrobe. Then he saw that her eyes were full of tears.
Was I talking nonsense? He asked. Just now?
No.
But I must have done something. Otherwise, why are you crying?
He held her tight and looked over her shoulder, out into the street. The hairy man with the suspenders had disappeared.
A couple of children were playing war in the trench that led to the cellar of the demolished house.
We shouldn't be sad, he said.
The singer across the street gave voice again. She was braying forth a song by Krieg.
I love thee, I love thee,
she screamed in her harsh, unsteady voice.
In spite of time and toil, I love thee. No, we shouldn't be sad, Elizabeth said.
In the afternoon it began to rain. It grew dark early, and the overcast became heavier and heavier. They were lying on the bed without a light. The window was open and rain was falling outside, slanting and pale, a wavering, fluid wall. Graeber listened to the monotonous downpour. He was reflecting that in Russia the time of mud must have set in, the time when everything sank in endless mire. There would still be mire when he got back there. Don't I have to leave? He asked. Frau Leeser will surely be back soon.
Let her come,
Elizabeth murmured sleepily.
Is it so late already?
I don't know, but perhaps she'll be back early because of the rain.
Perhaps because of the rain she won't come back till later.
That could be too.
Perhaps she won't even come back till tomorrow,
Elizabeth said, laying her face on his shoulder. Perhaps she'll even be run over by a truck. But that would be too much good luck.
You're not much of a philanthropist, Elizabeth murmured.
Graeber stared into the gray sheet of rain outside the window.
If we were married, I wouldn't have to go at all, he said.
Elizabeth did not move.
Why do you want to marry me?
She murmured.
After all, you hardly know me.
I have known you long enough.
How long? A few days.
Not a few days. I've known you for over a year. That's long enough.
Why a year? We can't count the time from our childhood. That was too long ago.
I'm not counting that either. But I was given about 3 weeks furlough for 2 years in the field. I have been here almost 2 weeks now. That corresponds to about 15 months at the front. And so I have known you for what amounts no more than a year, the equivalent of almost 2 weeks' leave. Elizabeth opened her eyes.
I have never thought about it that way.
I haven't either. I thought of that just now.
When?
Earlier, while you were asleep. In the rain and the dark, you think of a lot of things.
Does it have to be rainy and dark for that?
No, but one thinks differently then.
Did you think of anything else?
Yes. It occurred to me how marvelous it is that a man could use his hands and arms for something besides shooting a gun and throwing grenades. She looked at him.
Why didn't you tell me that at noon today?
At noontime, one can't say that.
It would have been better than talking about monthly allowances and marriage subsidies.
Graeber lifted his head.
It was the same thing, Elizabeth, he said, only in different words.
She murmured something.
Words are sometimes very important, she said then, at least in something like this.
I'm not used to using them so, but I will find some more of them. All I need is a little time.
Time,
Elizabeth sighed.
We don't have much, do we?
No. Yesterday we still had a lot, and tomorrow we will think that today we had a lot. Graeber lay still. Elizabeth's head rested on his arm. Her hair flowed darkly over the white pillow, and the shadows of the rain moved across her face.
You want to marry me,
she murmured.
But do you even know whether you love me at all?
How could we know that? One needs much more time and being together for that.
Perhaps. But then why do you want to marry me?
Because I can no longer think of life without you. Elizabeth was silent for a time.
Don't you believe that what's happened to us could have happened to you with somebody else?
She asked then. Graeber looked at the wavering gray tapestry woven by the rain outside the window. Perhaps it could have happened to me with somebody else, he said, Who can tell about things like that? Only now that it has happened to us, I can't imagine the possibility that it could ever have happened to me with anyone else. Elizabeth moved her head in his arm. You're learning. You're not talking now the way you did at noon. But of course it's night. Do you think I'll have to wait all my life for it to be night? No. And for the time being, I'll not say anything more about monthly subsidies. But just the same, we won't scorn them, will we?
What?
The subsidies.
For a moment, Graeber held his breath. Then you want to? He asked.
If we've known each other for a year, we really almost have to, and we can always get a divorce. Or can't we?
No.
She pressed herself against him and fell asleep again. He lay awake for a long time listening to the rain. He suddenly knew many things he might have said to her.